This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined, as always, in studio by Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, interesting things to talk about in the world of sports, interesting things that we've been talking about in the world of just the Happy Rant corporate empire as we you know, look down the road and think about grafting someone else in to our team. It can't help but make me think of team dynamics, and we're going to talk about a lot of those things today. We're going to talk about coaching. We're going to talk about some NFL coaching situations that are interesting. And Pipe, I want to start, though, with something near and dear to you, something that was a little bit of a surprise to me as a peripheral NBA fan. But it was Jimmy Butler showing up yesterday to Timberwolves practice and berating his coach and GM and teammates. And I was surprised because I didn't know that Jimmy Butler had such NBA idiot potential in him. He was kind of like a sneaky NBA idiot in that, like, 2 or 3 years ago, he seemed like an NBA golden boy, a model citizen. So as a Timberwolves fan and as a fan of all things NBA idiots, like, where do you place this? How is this registering with you?
It's not completely registering yet. So for listeners who are not totally aware of the situation, Jimmy Butler, Timberwolves traded for Jimmy Butler before last season, which at the time seemed like a fantastic move, taking a young team, adding a superstar, putting them into the playoff picture. When he was healthy, they were competing for the third seed in the West. He got injured. They still made the playoffs. So, I mean, it was a big step forward as a team. Then this offseason, everything is blown up, and he hates the coach, and he hates all the young players. Apparently, they all hate him, too. Therein lies Ted's comment about him being a profound NBA idiot. So there's a couple things that are just baffling about this. The first is, when you think back about 3 to 5 years, Jimmy Butler was a young guy coming out of Marquette University, late first round pick, so athletic upside. He was a defense guy with a bad offensive game, amazing backstory, had been homeless in the Houston area as a high schooler, and, you know, just basically a self-made man. And then a self-made superstar, like just a prolific worker who has progressively turned himself into a top, I don't know, 10 or 15 player in the league. And everybody seemed to respect him. You know, he just had this work ethic and he was a grinder. But now he's burned through 2 or 3 coaches. So I think he burned through Tibbs when he was with the Bulls. Then he burned through Fred Hoiberg. Now he's burned through Tibbs with the Timberwolves. And apparently nobody likes him. Yeah. So, but none of this really came to light until the last, like, 3 months. I mean, not in its sort of fully exposed, fully graduated, like, oh, he's an a-hole kind of way.
yeah, exactly. So, dude, this could have been the best kept secret in the NBA. It's fascinating to me in that, like, you know, typically these things come to light, you know, way before this. I feel like it's similar a little bit, Pipe, and you can speak to this, to like Kyrie Irving's coming out as an NBA idiot. I feel like that was gradual in a similar way, in that for a while people felt really good about Kyrie Irving, and then like a year or two ago, it was like, oh wait, this guy's a total idiot. Would you say there's similarities between those two cases?
Similarities, yeah, but like different brands. First of all, I think Kyrie is enigmatic, but I don't think I think the only person who doesn't like him is LeBron. But LeBron is kind of in a class all his own in terms of being an enigmatic human. And so he did the whole flat earth thing and a bunch of weird stuff. But like you don't hear a lot of people who are like, I hate playing with Kyrie Irving. It was awful being on the team. With Jimmy Butler, it's like, no, we don't want him around. We don't like him.
Yeah.
You know, he's mean. He's just a mean human, apparently.
Interesting.
His attitude apparently is, nobody on this team wants to win as much as me. Nobody works as hard as me. And so I hate everybody. Which is kind of the antithesis of leadership, which is nobody wants to win as much as me, nobody works as hard as me, so I will help you get there.
Exactly.
And so Karl Anthony Towns hates him. I don't think Andrew Wiggins hates anybody because I don't think Andrew Wiggins has feelings. He's just sort of a flatliner. But but he doesn't like either of them. So apparently what happened yesterday is, you know, it's preseason practices. It's the last week before the season. Butler's been away from the team the whole preseason. He shows up to practice to the team yesterday, shows up late, scrimmages with the team. Apparently he takes all the third stringers and just lays wood to the starters, just beats the bejesus out of them. while screaming curses at them about how they need him, they can't win without him. At one point, he turns around and screams at Scott Layden, who's the general manager, you know, you need me. You can't effing win without me. This is according to sources on the ground. And then he leaves practice early and goes and does an interview with Rachel Nichols for ESPN. So it's
what a great scenario. That's healthy. That's just a healthy corporate culture right there.
I know. I mean, I just everything about this. I think it's so good for the young players. It clearly it just airbrushes, polishes his image.
It shows him how to be a pro. This is what being a pro looks
like. Exactly. And it shows that Tom Thibodeau has a real good handle on the organization, has really fostered a culture of healthy competitiveness and team unity.
Absolutely.
I will also say this. When I heard that he played with the third stringers and beat the starters, I was like, yeah, but Tibbs doesn't know who his good players are. So, like, his third, fourth, and fifth best players are all third stringers. So that's Jimmy and a bunch of starters playing against Karl Anthony Towns, Wiggins, and a bunch of crap old guys because Tibbs doesn't know how to set up a roster. It is the weirdest. It's the weirdest. I don't know how else to put it. Like I don't even know who to hate right now. I'm just sort of like, just burn the thing. Just burn the whole thing down.
Absolutely. It's a great, weird NBA idiot story, man. The likes of which we really needed, I think, going into the season. So, Piper, let me lay a hypothetical on you. There are things happening right now in the Happy Rant corporate universe in which someone from our past may be coming back into the picture, trying to graft himself back into this team. So sort of working an angle. Yeah. So if the Happy Rant was an NBA team, and to be clear, just by way of a footnote, I wish we were. I would like Happy Rant jerseys. So from time to time, I play intramural basketball on campus, and I would really like to roll into one of these games with like a Happy Rant NBA style jersey. So if we have any designers, if we have anyone out there in the
garment
industry.
But not the kind with sleeves. Those look stupid.
No, gosh, no. Those are the worst. Yeah, those are the ones, like a real NBA jersey with a Happy Rant logo and color scheme incorporated. I would wear that with pride to my intramural game. So number 43, that is the Kluck family number right now, and I would rock that. But if we were an NBA franchise, Piper, and this name from the past were to kind of finagle his way back into our lives by, like, you know, coming to stay with one of us for 4 or 5 days, scrimmaging with the team, as it were. What figure would he be in this scenario? Would he be the Jimmy Butler, or would one of us be the Jimmy Butler? Who's the Andrew Wiggins? Who's the Karl Anthony Towns in this Happy Rant scenario?
It's really hard to make a comparison because, unlike the Minnesota Timberwolves, we currently have a pretty effective, healthy corporate culture.
We have a healthy clubhouse right now.
It's a flat structure where one person does not feel slighted or more important than the others. You know, Ron, I think, occasionally feels left out because he doesn't do the sports podcasts, but at the same time, he doesn't really want to anyway. So, you know, it still works. You know, it's the occasional tension. Ron is probably the most enigmatic person on our podcast because you never know if you're going to get like Ashland Ron, which is sort of flat and morose.
Ashland Ron is Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah. It's just sort of like he feels nothing about everything.
Exactly. Ashland Ron, home Ron is Andrew Wiggins. Travel Ron is, gosh, who's maybe Karl Anthony Towns?
Yeah. I mean, just at his peak, he's just, he's a magnetic presence. He, occasionally doesn't totally show up, but usually that's the internet connection.
And he literally doesn't show up.
Doesn't bring it on every subject, kind of like Towns doesn't bring it on defense.
Exactly.
But always considered to be a peak talent. So, yeah, I think that's fair. So there's not really a situation where this unnamed figure could charge in and immediately just take the reins over the rest of us, because I think we would just be like, nah, man, you can go right on back out that gym door. An actual basketball team. Unlike the Timberwolves, who apparently sat there and took it when Jimmy Butler decided to lose his mind.
Oh my goodness, man. You can't have that. Like, if I was a Timberwolves fan, that would be the most disheartening aspect of the story to me. The way that they just, like, you know, laid down and
I can understand the players doing it because, like, there is a scenario in which you just roll your eyes and you're like, you know what? You're going to get traded anyway. Nobody needs, like, what's the point of fighting with you? Nobody wins. But for the coach to sit there or the GM and not be like, no, you can get out of here and you're suspended. That's what I don't get. I mean, it just shows that there is genuinely no leadership in the organization there. And it's kind of ridiculous. So, yeah, it's really hard to imagine. I feel like we are more like the Spurs and Kawhi Leonard.
Oh, interesting.
So we are the Spurs organization. We are the Popovich-led organization. What's the other guy's name? R.C. Buford. So Pop and R.C. Mm-hmm. Buford. So if Kawhi had tried this – this unnamed figure would be Kawhi trying to sort of control the organization. They're like, you know what? No, you're going to Canada, and we're going to take back some young players, and we're probably still going to win 53 games because we're the Spurs.
Exactly. Enjoy Toronto. Enjoy the long winter.
Yeah, I mean, Toronto's a lovely city. I mean, it's genuinely an amazing city.
It really is.
But from a basketball perspective, San Antonio's just a hair better than the Raptors.
Absolutely. Yeah, I almost feel like this unnamed figure pipe would be back to the Timberwolves scenario. He would almost be like Tom Thibodeau. Like, he would come in feeling like he has a lot more authority than he actually has, and it would just make things awkward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, also not having been effective in like 2 to 3 years at least. The game
having
has
his
passed
best
him
years
by.
Be way, yeah. Yeah, his best years are way behind him. You know, more of a name at this point than an actual performer.
A loud berating voice.
The loud berating voice. The first few games would be just like disastrously awkward. I think he's the Tibbs
bit of a one trick pony when it comes to how he does things.
Yeah,
you know, sort of a he has like a system, a shtick, if you will. I think Tibbs is a pretty solid comparison.
Dude, that's fascinating. So back to the NBA. I was about to say that I'm not sure what my level of interest is in the NBA yet this season. So this is going to be kind of an abbreviated NBA preview in which I lob a few questions to you and you can expound on them. But one of my working theories, Piper, for the NBA is that in another decade, we're going to see totally player-run teams. We're going to see teams without coaches. And
this out when we were talking about, I think it was like coaching culture and Steve Kerr and things like that on an episode or two ago. It's a pretty fascinating theory.
It is. I think it's an interesting theory. I'm not sure you buy it yet, and that's fine. I'm not sure how viable it actually is, but kind of in the spirit of that theory and in the spirit of my hypothesis that NBA coaches just aren't that important. I'm going to lob out the name of a random NBA team and see if you can name the coach of that team.
Okay.
So this is a little test of your NBA knowledge.
Oh, man, I can think of like five teams right now that I don't know the coaches for off the top of my head. But all right,
exactly. And I know the coaches of just very few of them, precious few. So I'll lob a few of these out, and this will give you an opportunity, Pipe, to not only see if you know the name of the coach of that team, but also to vamp a little bit about that team and their potential or lack thereof.
All right.
Okay. First one, Sacramento Kings. Who's the coach?
Is it Dave Yeager? Or Joerger, something like that?
Yeah, I realized I should probably, like, in my studio, pull up the
know the answer to this team?
No, I realized that I needed, for this segment to really work, I need to have the answers readily available. So, I'm looking at it right now, and it's Dave Yeager, Joerger, Dave Yeager. So what do you know about Dave Yeager? Tell us about Dave.
My recollection is that he used to coach the Memphis Grizzlies, and he was sort of one of those well-respected, hard-nosed, kind of the next-gen coaches. You know, there was sort of like post-Phil Jackson, post-Rudy Tomjanovich, that, you know, that era was on its way out. And I think he had just a major falling out with the front office in Memphis because they brought in a bunch of – and so he was coaching fine. Yeah. The team was doing fine. It was kind of during the grit and grind era. And then he ended up in Sacramento, I think. I could be completely making this up, but I think that's the case.
Dude, no, you got it, man. You got it right. And he has a rich, like – minor league basketball pedigree. So this guy's coached in the CBA, the D League. He had a lot of success with the Sioux Falls Sky Force. So,
and I remember there was a time when the Timberwolves were looking for a coach that he was one of the names that was considered. And in fact, I think he came in for an interview and people loved his CBA pedigree because that was the same thing that Flip Saunders had, former coach of the Timberwolves who passed away a couple years ago. Probably the only successful coach in Timberwolves history. But the Kings are, I mean, they're like the Cleveland Browns of the NBA. They just,
interesting.
They perpetually have high picks. They perpetually have guys who have potential who never meet it. And, you know, ever since Rick Adelman left, so like the Vlade Divac, Peja Stojakovic, Chris Webber, Doug Christie years, they've just been abysmal.
And yeah, they've been abysmal, and they've been like almost like a semi-pro team. You know what I mean? Just like a non-entity.
Yeah,
Talked about, never thought about.
They never have a roster that makes sense. Like this year, I think they have like 9 guys who are power forwards and centers. They have 2 mediocre point guards, and they have nobody who can shoot. And that's sort of the opposite of how NBA teams have been proven to work.
Exactly. It's so, like my fantasy team. You know, it's all like 235-pound tailbacks.
It's all fullbacks.
Exactly.
So Jaeger is – I think he's a good coach in an awful situation.
Interesting.
And you know, kind of like some of the guys who have gone through the Browns and have proven themselves to be decent coaches elsewhere. So I think they're going to be at the bottom of the West again. They're going to get another high pick. They're going to draft somebody who has a lot of upside and never develops. And they're just a crap franchise.
Yeah, indeed. I'm going to lob another franchise at you, Piper, and see if you know the name of this head coach. Toronto Raptors.
I just heard this guy's name. He was one of their assistant coaches last year.
Dude, he's got a great name.
Shoot. I cannot remember off the top of my head. He was an assistant coach for them last year. Then when they let their coach go, they let Dwayne Casey go, they hired him. Remind me his name.
Nick Nurse.
That's right.
Nick Nurse. Yeah, and so, I'm trying to think of a clever, like, you know, scenario for Nick Nurse. Like he sounds like the kind of guy who fill in the blank, but I can't come up with anything. I just know that I'm charmed by the name. What can you tell us about Nick Nurse?
I feel like when they announce his name, did you ever watch the Animaniacs? It was after the cartoon era. But
right, it was in the dead cartoon window for me, like post being a kid and pre having kids.
So there's a character named Wacko who had a thing for attractive nurses, and every time he'd see one, he would say, "Hello, nurse." And I feel like that's how they should introduce Nick Nurse every single game.
Dude, absolutely. Yeah, when the lights go down and they do the NBA arena thing where they're introducing players, hello, nurse. Yeah. That would be a missed opportunity if they don't do that.
Yeah, apparently he is a more forward-thinking coach. So Dwayne Casey he led the Raptors to a whole bunch of playoff runs. They were the number one team in the East last year by record and then got the floor mopped with them by Cleveland. They could never get past LeBron. They turned over their roster. You know, they got rid of DeMar and brought in Kawhi. They changed coaches. They've got a deep young bench. And he's supposed to be a guy who can essentially develop an offensive scheme that's just a little bit more modern, and then also just sort of bring fresh blood in. I think historically you find that if there's a coach who's perpetually winning 50 to 60 games and you replace him, you almost inevitably go backwards, unless it's like Phil Jackson and the Lakers. You know, you don't get better by getting rid of a successful coach. It's the price you pay in a zero-sum game where it's championship or failure. Like, they're going to go backwards over the next couple years. I think it's almost inevitable.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. That's a good word. Piper, I'm going to lob an easy one at you now, and I'm lobbing this easy one at you because I have a theory about this coach. So the next team is the Miami Heat.
Oh, that's of course I can picture his face. It's Eric something or yeah. other.
Dude, Eric Spoelstra.
Spoelstra,
Eric
that's
Spoelstra.
Right.
And of course you can picture his face because here's my theory about Spoelstra. Spoelstra looks like the guy on your wing at Wheaton College. So the guy who lived on your wing in the dorm, nobody really liked him that much because he was kind of, you know, he was decent looking, affluent. You know, he has that Grand Rapids-y last name. But he was the guy who like organized everything like intramurals wise. Like he ordered the t-shirts. You know, he put all the plans together and you kind of begrudgingly appreciated him for that. And I think that's the role Eric Spoelstra plays with the Miami Heat. Agree or disagree, Piper?
I totally agree on your characterization of the name and the face. Also, yeah, if your name is Eric Spoelstra, you were probably a great three-point shooter for Hope College.
Yeah, he went to Hope College. He's got thick ankles. He was just shooting threes. You know, that's it.
So here's the one thing that doesn't work about the characterization is that he has a tan. Now and people with the name Spoelstra shouldn't even be able to get a tan. You should, they're just
Casper. They should burn easily.
Yeah, just they should all be 6'4 to 6'7 and super pasty. The other thing is he's actually a really good coach. The most impressive – he's done two incredibly impressive things in his career. The first is replace Pat Riley and earn the respect of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh.
Yeah, that's true.
As like a 36-year-old coach or something like that. The second is build a playoff team. Granted, it's the Eastern Conference, so it's in the Junior Varsity Conference, but build a consistent playoff competitive team out of just scraps post those guys. And they have, you know, they haven't had a super high draft picks other than like Justice Winslow. They haven't signed any major free agents, although maybe they'll trade for Jimmy Butler. Please, Spo, trade for Jimmy Butler. Do us all a favor.
Exactly.
Maybe you can earn his respect too. But yeah, I think he's a really good coach. And if he, you know, I mean, if he was coaching the Timberwolves, I think they would be dramatically better, and people wouldn't be griping about lack of leadership and lack of effort and things like that.
Exactly. Piper, one last one. I want to drop one more on you, see if you can call up the name of this coach. The Brooklyn Nets.
Is it Kenny Atkinson?
It's Kenny. Yes, it's Kenny Atkinson. And my question to you is, if you're Kenny Atkinson, at what point do you start going by Ken? And if you go by Ken Atkinson, does that change your persona as an NBA head coach?
Yeah, you can't be in the NBA and be named Ken. And like even there's a referee named Kenny Maurer who's like 89 years old. And he's Kenny. Like he's not Ken
Still goes
Maurer.
By Kenny. We still describe him as boyish, you know.
I mean, Kenny Anderson, like Kenny Smith, like all of the Kens in the NBA are not Kenneth. Yep. Except for Kenneth Faried, but he stinks. Yeah. Maybe if he was Kenny Faried, he'd be good. Maybe that's his problem.
Yeah.
You stay with Kenny as long as you work in the NBA. I think even if you get like a general manager job someday, you're still Kenny because then you're calling back on your playing coaching days.
Absolutely. It does beg the question though. These other coaches in the NBA, like Fred Hoiberg, Tom Thibodeau, Why do they, like these mid-century name guys, why isn't it Tommy Thibodeau or Freddie Hoiberg, you know? I wonder why these guys have gone with like the more kind of buttoned up professional versions of their names.
Well, Fred Hoiberg he played at Iowa State. Or no, I think he played at Iowa State. Then he coached at Iowa State. And he was sort of known as the mayor of
– The mayor, Freddie Hoiberg.
So like, right. But Fred Hoiberg is a mayor name. Like –
Yeah, you're right.
I can see that sign in a front yard, you know, vote Fred. That Freddie Hoiberg, that guy's not a mayor.
No.
So
Freddie Hoiberg's the fun guy, like down at the bar, you know, used to be the star of your high school's team, but he's not mayor potential. He doesn't have mayor written all over
Fred Hoiberg. I don't think Tommy works unless you're a player. Like I think Tommy is an athlete name, not a coach name. I don't think you can be a coach named Tommy and have any respect. And not Kenny, you can, not Tommy.
Also, Tommy really only works if you have like a monosyllabic last name. So like Tommy Smith or Tommy Jones or whatever, Tommy John, You know, those all work. But Tommy Thibodeau is just like, you know, it takes a half hour to say that name.
Tommy Thibodeau sounds like he plays in Kenny G's band.
Yeah, exactly. He's like a washed up like New Orleans jazz musician, you know.
He used to have a cool nickname, but now he's just Tommy Thibodeau.
Yeah, Tommy Thibodeau. You know, he's like the replacement drummer, you know, for your jazz trio in New Orleans. That's not good.
I have a thought about your coaching theory. Thinking about these coaches that you've thrown out there, thinking about the direction. So you said that in the next few years there's going to be just sort of totally player-led teams. And yep. You're right. I don't totally buy it. But I do partially buy it.
Okay.
I think that the NBA is going to go the same route as like Hollywood. In fact, it already is.
How so?
Well, Hollywood is all driven by A-listers. Some of them are performers, actors and actresses. Some of them are directors or producers. Okay. So like if Ron Howard is involved in your film, he's sort of the A-lister.
He's the A-lister. If it's like a Ron Howard film, getting made. It's going to get a big theatrical release. You know, big deal.
Terrence Malick, Michael Bay. Granted, Michael Bay makes – Michael Bay is sort of like the James Dolan of movies. Like he's a big name in the industry and he sucks at his job.
Dude, Michael Bay is like the Amari Stoudemire. You know what I mean? Like he's going to come in. He's got a big name. He's going to score a lot of points. But at the end of the day, like your movie's not going to be any better. You know, your team's not going to be any better. It's interesting.
So, but then there's also like Leonardo DiCaprio. Like that's the LeBron. You know, if it's a film. Now,
it's a Leo film,
and occasionally there becomes like collaborations between, you know, top directors or producers and top performers, and that's where you get, you know, the best films. And I think the same is true in basketball, where so coaches are not going to become irrelevant. Some coaches are going to become irrelevant.
Yeah.
And so it's I think a Hollywood understanding of the NBA makes more sense than like an authority structure.
Yeah.
It's just sort of who holds the influence in that organization. So and that's why the Timberwolves are a hot mess, because the answer is nobody. There's a terrible owner, which is akin to a terrible studio. There's a dumb coach. That's a bad director.
Yep.
There's potential talent, but they haven't really proven themselves in anything. So that's like people who've been in like young adult fiction movies or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there's a star who thinks he's a star, and that's basically Russell Crowe. So you know, maybe has had his
moments. Jimmy Butler is the Russell Crowe of the Timberwolves right now. It's fascinating.
Right. And so some people think maybe he's more like Mel Gibson, where he had his day and now everybody's like, I don't know if I want to work with that guy. He's insane.
Yeah. That guy's the worst to work with.
And I think like, and then what you end up with is like a movie that costs a ton of money is going to be like mediocre in the box office and just critically panned because it's just a dog of a movie. That's the Timberwolves this year.
Dude, you're so right, man. You're so right. Yeah, I think we could run like every other NBA team through that Hollywood grid as well. And
who is the art house film of the NBA?
Oh, interesting.
So like there's maybe one star who's decided to do something creative for once. Like they're just like, you know what? I loved the script. I loved the ethos of that film.
I love what they're doing. I love what they're trying to do. Yeah, kind of an under the radar place, dude. Could it be? Could it be Milwaukee with Giannis, with the Greek Freak?
That's a good one. I think,
dude, it's kind of an indie town. You know what I mean? It's kind of like making the movie Fargo.
Yes,
where people are like, oh, Fargo, what a weird setting for a movie.
They have an underrated coach because they have Mike Budenholzer, who was in Atlanta when they went on their lengthy playoff run. So he's not a peak name, but like he's had a lot of success.
Right.
And they're going to be way better than last year, or at least more entertaining than last year. I think that's a good one. I'm trying to think who else would fit the bill. I think Denver potentially.
Yeah.
Because although Denver's more like the ensemble cast of young people who haven't made it as stars yet.
Yeah. So Denver's like the,
they would be like, they're like Freaks and Geeks. So where all of these people became stars out of it, but it didn't have an amazing run. But you look back and you're like, wow, That's a lot of name talent in that show.
That was a powerhouse cast, as it turns out. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Interesting. Dude, what are the Lakers in a movie scenario? What kind of movie are the LA Lakers?
They're the one that Leo stars in that people go, oh, that's an Oscar contender. Even when you look at it, you're like, they're sort of like the Wolf
of
Wall
Street
or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Wolf of Wall Street.
Which raised a lot of eyebrows, you know, was sort of critically acclaimed, but was sort of like, I don't know.
It was sort of critically acclaimed, but then you could look at it and you could go, this could have been like a garbage, like, kind of nudity schlock 80s movie too. If you watch it in a certain way and if it doesn't have Leo.
That's what it was, actually.
Yeah, that's what it was, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you had plugged in, like, I don't know, Chris Pratt instead of Leonardo DiCaprio, all of a sudden it becomes it becomes exactly what you just described. Actually,
it's a movie from 1988 that has a bunch of boobs in it that like our parents didn't let us watch.
I think the Lakers are the Revenant.
Okay. I can explain that, but I can see it.
So
I can see it.
It's big budget, big star.
Yep.
Really weird supporting cast.
Yep.
Who's not going to get any play at all. Nobody remembers nobody's going to remember anything except the star. Even if they have good seasons, even if they have some potential. So, The Revenant had a few other people in it who had good performances. Dare I say better performances than Leonardo DiCaprio. And nobody remembers who they are. That's going to be like Brandon Ingram, hopefully Lonzo Ball. They have a really weird makeup. They're just not going to be that good.
Right.
Although they're the Lakers with LeBron.
In the same way that the Revenant wasn't that good.
Yeah, exactly. But, so everybody's going to say that it's good and convince themselves that it's good. And it's just going to be eh.
Dude, you're so right. The Revenant was that year's everybody's required to talk about how good it is movie. But yet it's a movie that absolutely no one wants to watch again. Like no one's rewatching the Revenant.
Right.
Anywhere.
And the Warriors are the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
Because they're all the stars. They're all – you can bank them for success. Yep. They're going to
be
enjoyable.
But everybody's bored with it at this point.
Right. But so they're going to be equal parts, like always enjoyable but kind of boring because they're always enjoyable. Like you just – you know that it's going to be that. So they're the Marvel Universe almost certainly. The Celtics are the – let's see. I think they're probably the most interesting team to both in the NBA this year as well as trying to compare to Hollywood because they have stars, they have young talent, they have a coach whose reputation might have outpaced his actual success, although he's a really good coach.
Their coach is a young star. You know, so he may be – who's the young director who is maybe not as good as everybody thinks? I have one. I have one in mind. But who do you think it is?
I'm tough. I have a hard time remembering directors. I think he might be that good. He just has – like his reputation has gotten there before his success has gotten there. So it's just hard to tell. Which director were you thinking of?
Dude, this one's going to be controversial, but Ryan Coogler. Like I think he's a really, really good director. I really do. But I don't think he's like Apex Mountain. I don't think he's amazing. Like I didn't think – like I thought Black Panther could have been better. I thought Creed was a really good movie. But it was kind of hard to screw that up. You know what I mean? I like Ryan Coogler. Don't get me wrong. And I like Brad Stevens. I like him a lot, but he just needs he needs the signature moment. You know what I mean? He needs to take the next step. He needs to have the huge success.
Yeah. I think Coogler's a really good comparison for Stevens because again, there has been success and there has been some measurably fantastic films.
Yeah, for sure.
But not the best.
Dude. So like Fruitvale Station was kind of would you say that's the Butler arc of Brad Stevens' career or maybe even the Utah Jazz arc? Where it's like nobody expected much, but it was a super great like surprise thing.
Well, he went from Butler to Boston.
Wait. Oh, yeah, yeah. You're right. He wasn't with the Jazz.
No, Quinn Snyder's with the Jazz.
I was conflating him with another –
You know what? The Jazz are in that art house film.
The Jazz are an art house film. The Jazz are perpetually an art house film.
Because they're – people are like they could be the second best team in the West – they have no stars, although Donovan Mitchell is close. and a bunch of just sort of like weird offbeat players. They play in a weird offbeat city. Like Salt Lake City should not have an NBA team, except they do, and
no,
they draw fans.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I say they shouldn't by sort of demographics. Anybody who listens from Utah, all of our Mormon listeners, that's nothing against you. You're actually a fantastic fan base.
Also, check out Noah's Events Venue.
That's right, based out of
Utah. Which we're pretty sure is a Mormon company at this point.
Although one listener did let me know that Mormons meet on Sundays, and so we can be confident that those are not like Mormon temples that they're renting out, because otherwise there would be a conflict. So that's
good.
Good.
Dude, you got well actually by a Mormon. That's a first for the program.
Well, I like fact-checking listeners, because we don't do any of that ourselves.
Exactly. Dude, I think Quinn Snyder is the Wes Anderson of the NBA.
Oh, that makes me dislike him so much.
Dude, right,
like
he's
Wes
always
Anderson.
But he's always making an art house picture. You know what I mean? Like, he wouldn't know what to do with, like, that's why Wes Anderson will never get hired to direct like the next Marvel Universe movie. You know, nobody will ever make that happen. And it's kind of how you can't imagine Quinn Snyder coaching a team full of legitimate superstars. Like, you're never going to see it. It's always an art house film.
Yeah, I think the Knicks are the DC Comics.
That's super funny.
We used to be awesome, and now we suck, but we still have a big name, and we make terrible products. So,
dude, right? Like, we've got this huge brand, but you don't actually want to watch it.
Yeah, but we're terrible. We're just we have some characters that could be good, but we've completely botched them.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. So, I think the Dallas Mavericks are Steven Spielberg movies.
Oh, interesting.
Because Rick Carlisle, aka Jim Carrey, if you look closely, is a formerly top coach who still has the reputation as like he's a genius, but he's really just a crusty old dude who hasn't coached a good team in like 5 years.
Yeah,
kind of like Spielberg hasn't put out a good movie since.
A long time ago.
I don't remember. It's been a while.
Yep.
I don't know, like Saving Private Ryan or something. Who is the Christopher Nolan of the NBA?
Oh, that's fascinating. The Christopher Nolan of the NBA. Like, so...
And I realize you have a differing opinion of Christopher Nolan than much of the public does.
I don't like Christopher Nolan.
Exactly.
I don't like his movies. I don't know him as a person. I'm sure he's a lovely guy. I'm sure I would love him, but I don't like his movies. So Christopher Nolan of the NBA...
I think I have an answer for you.
Yeah, lay it on me, man, while I'm thinking.
And in fact, the sentence that you just gave sums it up well. And it's the Houston Rockets.
Yep, you're so right. You're so right, man. So in the same way that Christopher Nolan is like this, like certain people love the Rockets. Certain people are just convinced that the Rockets, like, this is their year. They're going to do it.
Well,
you know,
like basketball nerds are like, man, they've solved the basketball code. The way they play, you know, it's all like layups and dunks and three pointers and efficiency, and so there's a nerd aspect to the fan.
There's a real nerd aspect of it. The same way that like nerds tend to really ride with Christopher Nolan pictures, for sure.
Any other Hollywood people we're just grossly overlooking, or
gosh,
NBA teams
man,
for that matter.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This has been fun, though. This has been, like, by far the most interesting way to do an NBA preview, for sure.
Good thing we did all the show prep for it. Okay, one more name we have to solve, because he's polarizing, and you love him, and I don't, and that is Russell Westbrook.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, who is Russell Westbrook in Hollywood? Kind of a loose cannon, always takes over whatever picture he's in.
Always makes it about him.
Polarizing.
I have a suggestion, but I want to hear yours first, if you come up with one.
Yeah, okay, dude. So my suggestion, and it's because people don't always like working with him, but he's definitely like a bona fide star, Christian Bale. Like, he makes pretty amazing pictures, but it's truly always about him. Like, you never watch a Christian Bale. There's never a movie that he's in. It's always like a Christian Bale movie. You know what I mean? I think he's the Russell Westbrook of Hollywood. Although I could be wrong. I feel like there's a better one out there, and I'm just not thinking of it.
See, I think lowly enough of Russell Westbrook that felt a little gracious, because Christian Bale has made spectacular films.
Dude, he has, but they're not always the kind of spectacular films that everybody notices. Like, for example, I think 310 to Yuma is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Yes,
in my life.
It is, and it's so good. And it has two of the least likable actors in it.
Dude, exactly. Yeah, but it's just incredible. Like, this legitimately great movie that I would put up against almost any other movie, but it's not a movie that, like, is on the tip of everybody's tongue when they talk about Christian Bale. I mean, when they talk about Christian Bale, it's always, I mean, it's always Batman, it's always Christopher Nolan, or it's always The Prestige, which is a movie that, like, nerds really like, but I was just kind of meh about. Like, The Prestige isn't my... It's not my favorite movie by a long shot.
The Prestige is sort of like a low-grade Usual Suspects.
Yeah, it's like a less good Usual Suspects, exactly. Yeah, the Prestige is sort of... Who would the Prestige be in the NBA? Oh, gosh. We already used the Knicks. Yeah. I was about to maybe go there.
No,
but
it's got to be a better... it's got to be a better team than that, but a team that's always sort of like... They're sort of a darling to some teams, but generally a letdown.
Yeah. Dude, maybe the Grizzlies. Maybe the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or the Clippers.
There's a little bit of prestige.
I think it would be like the Blake and DeAndre era Clippers.
The Blake and DeAndre era Clippers. A lot of high expectations.
Some legitimate amazing moments.
Some legitimate amazing moments. Absolutely. Some signature performances. Some really, really great performances. Okay, who's your Russell Westbrook though? Or who's your Russell Westbrook of Hollywood?
He's Tom Cruise.
Ooh. Dude. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense now that you mention it.
He's Tom Cruise because it's big budget. There's literally never anybody else in a Tom Cruise movie. Like
it's Tom Cruise
and lackeys.
He eats up so much of the budget. There's no room for anyone else.
I mean, even, like Christian Bale, he acts alongside,
dude, you're right.
Some other Hollywood A-listers. And it's about him, and he's apparently just a douche to work with. But Tom Cruise is the entire cast of all the Mission Impossible movies, all the Jack Reacher movies. It's the same movie over and over again. It's him doing explosive things and just sort of carrying the weight of it on his back. And you're just like, you know what? If they replaced him with somebody who was more multi-talented, or if they actually had a cast of characters around him, or if he let them act, this could be better. And it's exactly how I feel about Oklahoma City.
Dude, I would argue that his two best movies are the ones that he did with like other people. Jerry Maguire. So that was Tom Cruise opposite Cuba Gooding Jr., legendary movie, and then the one with Jamie Foxx, the kind of indie one where
was it the Soloist or no, he was a hitman.
Yeah. They're in the car together, one. Right. So yeah, but you're right, man. Every other Tom Cruise,
I think it was
movie
called Collateral.
It was Collateral, which was the name of like every movie for a while. But but you're right, man. Every Tom Cruise movie is a Russell Westbrook experience. Like he's getting his 40 points, but like nobody else is doing anything, and it's still a failure. And, like, they still lose.
Yeah, and he's giving other people acting jobs, just like Russell Westbrook averages 10 assists, but they're like useless 10 assists. They're not like in the flow of a game 10 assists. They're not making other players better 10 assists. I have lots of negative opinions about Russell Westbrook's game, but I also recognize his talent and success, which is kind of how I feel about Tom Cruise as well.
Dude, right. He's compelling. Like, you'll watch a Russell Westbrook game if it's on. You know, if Oklahoma City's playing and it's a, you know, Wednesday night or whatever, you'll watch. And in the same way that you'll watch a Tom Cruise movie. You know, you'll see it. You'll be moderately entertained by it. You know?
Yes.
But it's not going to change your life.
And something will be disappointing and something will be explosive in both cases all the time.
Dude, you're so right, man. You're so right. Tom Cruise is the Russell Westbrook of Hollywood. This is fascinating. This is a really interesting way to look at the NBA, Piper, and we are over an hour on our call, although we did vamp a little bit beforehand. So I want to lay a couple of other sports things on you, important things that happened in the world of sports. I don't know that we'll get to our deep dive into bad coaches in the NFL in this episode, but
they'll be here for a few more weeks. I'm sure we can come back around to them.
That's right. There's plenty of NFL season left to delve into the bad coaching that takes place on Sunday afternoons, but. I want to talk about a good thing that happened in the NFL, an interesting thing, and that is Drew Brees becoming the NFL's all-time leading passer. I watched it happen in real time in my living room with the boys. It was a fun moment. Two questions for you. One, did this mean anything to you? like watching that sort of thing happen as an adult, like is it meaningful? Does it move the needle for you at all? And then number two, like where do you put Breeze in the pantheon of the all-time greats in light of this thing happening?
I think it meant more, like when Brett Favre broke a touchdown record or set a record, or when Peyton Manning did, because those felt like very different eras in the NFL.
Sure.
I feel like
this feels like the arena football era in which like a passing record is going to fall.
It feels a little bit
week.
Like, yeah, a little bit. Or like the home run records in the late 90s and early 2000s, where you're like, oh, the game is just different now.
Yeah.
You know, there's something different going on here. This is not to imply that anybody in the NFL is cheating, but just the game has shifted.
This is the 7-on-7 era in the NFL. Like, I mean, this is past Skelly every Sunday.
He's been doing it for a long time, and he was putting up video game numbers kind of before that became the norm. You know, he was the first guy to throw for 5,000 yards, or maybe not the first guy, but the first guy to do it in back-to-back seasons, to do it consistently. He holds records for yardage, I think for completions, for completion percentage, but he's not like an Alex Smith dink and dunk guy. So like he's legitimately a top tier quarterback, but it just didn't have the same resonance with me as records that happened several years ago or records in other sports.
Absolutely.
And I think some of that has to do with the fact that like the I couldn't tell you what his number is, like what number needed to happen. I know it was like 71,000 and change, but like that number doesn't mean anything to me. But whereas like when Barry Bonds was going for the career home run record, like 715 meant something. Like that's a hard number. Yep. Or, you know, Cal Ripken's 1,900 and something games. Like there's sort of that benchmark.
That's right.
So yeah, it was a cool moment. The other thing that made it less cool is looking at it and going, yeah, but Matthew Stafford is on pace to break this in like 6 years, you know, or something.
Exactly,
you know, there's
man.
Just the again, exactly. The game has changed so much that mediocre players are on pace to be better statistically than historically great players.
Matthew Stafford, my fantasy quarterback. So I'm you know, personally pulling for him to break that record. So hopefully we'll see that soon. But Piper, as a Tennessee resident, and maybe we should end with this conversation, there are a lot of Peyton Manning apologists in our state who will, like, you know, go to the mattresses over Peyton Manning being the greatest NFL quarterback of all time. And I no disrespect to Peyton Manning, the Manning family, their legacy. I do not think he's the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't even know that he's in, you know, a top five type discussion for me. And one of the things that Tennesseans like to lean on in that argument is that they like to make this argument that, like, Peyton Manning really never had anybody around him, which I think is ludicrous. Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, and Edgerrin James were as good as any skill position triad the league has ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, he had two Hall of Fame wide receivers at the same time.
Yeah,
and then he went to the Broncos, who had two Pro Bowl level wide receivers and a Pro Bowl level tight end for those few years before he got injured at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, the most impressive thing Peyton Manning did was winning a Super Bowl as Peyton Manning's corpse with the Denver Broncos. Like, that to me was fascinating.
And more impressive than beating the Rex Grossman-led Bears? I'm stunned. You would think that. I don't understand.
Dude, yeah, the Rex Grossman-led Bears in a monsoon, you know. I don't know. I love the Colts, and I did love Peyton Manning's career. He was super fun to watch. But I don't know. You look at the Bradys. You look at Rodgers, you look at Breeze.
You know what makes me sad?
What's that?
So Drew Breeze, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, all of these guys who are peak level quarterbacks of their era have played in offensive systems or with coaches that put them in a position to be maximally successful.
Absolutely.
Aaron Rodgers plays for a Neanderthal.
Dude, that's so right, man. And you can make the argument that what he's done is so much more impressive because of what you just said.
Every time I watch Pat Mahomes play quarterback for the Chiefs this year, I think that's what Aaron Rodgers should be.
Oh, my goodness. He could throw for 10,000 yards in a season if he played for Andy Reid. It'd be insane.
If he played for, like, if he played for anybody besides, like, I mean, this is the bad coaching conversation, but like,
yeah,
there's only like four teams that if he played for, he would be worse than he is right now in terms of That's offensive true. System. Almost anybody else is like, oh yeah, maybe we should do something mildly creative to get a receiver open for the greatest quarterback talent of our present day. And I hate the Packers.
Exactly.
So I love the fact that they have a trash coach, but it makes me sad as a NFL fan that Aaron Rodgers statistically is going to struggle to get to the same place as Brady, Brees, and Manning because he plays for a garbage offense.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I totally agree. And it's funny, man, how short people's memories are when they talk about the great quarterbacks in the league and of all time. You know, I just think of the guys who were around when we were kids, you know, the Montanas, the Elways, the Marinos, you know, how do you position these guys in that conversation?
I mean, you almost have to take the NFL in eras because it's a little bit like the NBA in that way. Like,
yeah,
trying to compare Bill Russell to Michael Jordan to LeBron James it's impossible because
yeah. –
because of the style of game, you know, trying to compare anybody who is a scorer before the 3-point line to shooters after the 3-point line, you know,
yeah.
I feel a little bit like the Manning Drew Brees guys. They're kind of like the Steph Curry of the NFL in that the what they did with offense completely changed the game. And it went from you know, two tight ends, I formations, ground and pound, Ted's favorite version of football, to Absolutely. What it is today, which is it's very much 7-on-7. But yeah, I mean, like, what would Steve Young or Joe Montana be today?
Yeah.
Ah, goodness, who knows?
Steve Young playing for Andy Reid would be bananas.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be ridiculous. Joe Montana playing for Andy Reid, you know what I mean? I mean, these guys and their skill sets. And I think Joe Montana playing for Bill Walsh when he played for Walsh was, you know, that era analog to somebody playing for Andy Reid today. I mean, Walsh was perfect for Montana in the way that if Montana had been drafted by the Bears and played for Mike Ditka, he would have been he may have been Jim McMahon. You know, he may have been a guy who went to one Pro Bowl and was hurt a whole bunch and like really never heard from again.
I think the Bill Walsh Andy Reid comparisons are fitting. Again, not in terms of overall success. One of them is an all-time great coach. The other an all-time great offensive coach.
Yeah.
But every quarterback who has played for them has been dramatically better under them than anywhere else they played.
Exactly.
And the Bill Walsh, I mean, I was listening to a podcast. I can't remember what it was. And they were talking about Bill Walsh and how he turned just garbage quarterbacks into successful passers, but that's because he was. I mean, it's almost like he invented the forward pass.
Yeah.
He's the one who is like, oh, a 5-yard pass is as good as a 5-yard run, except that you can break that for a long touchdown. Yeah. Welcome to the league, Jerry Rice. And
exactly.
And so he changed the game. And so It's impossible to rate Joe Montana outside of the context of Bill Walsh, which means it's impossible to rate him at all. So when people say he's the greatest quarterback ever, I'm like, no, he had the greatest circumstance ever. And beyond that, I don't know. I mean, it's just like Brady and Belichick. It was
Brady. No, it really is.
Brady might have been Kirk Cousins if he played for any other team, like a decent NFL quarterback, but not an all-timer.
Exactly. And Piper, that's a good note to end on.
Sorry, I said Kirk Cousins. Oh, I did it again. My bad.
I know it. Triggered Ted. I can't help but realize that we made it nearly through an entire hour long plus call without invoking the name.
He was just the most sort of decent. Just the most decent quarterback I could think of.
Exactly. As long as we use him as like the Mendoza line of kind of bland NFL quarterbacking, I'm fine with that.
I'll revise this to Dak Prescott. He could be the Dak Prescott of the NFL.
I love it. Yeah, much better, much better. Piper, this has been a blast, man. I've enjoyed this conversation very much. I probably need to go and make sure there's no like falling down cabinetry in my house, courtesy of my two boys.
Yes, but, listeners, the part of this podcast you won't get to hear because we're going to edit it out is Ted's son sticking his head in and saying, "There's a cabinet falling off the wall upstairs." So,
dude, I feel like we've invoked so many names on the podcast today. What's a good name to go with for our sign off? Like cadence wise, could be a Hollywood name, could be a football name, could be an NBA name.
I think in honor of mediocre quarterbacks from different eras, I think you should go with Jim McMahon.
Oh, I love Jim McMahon, dude. He was one of my all-time favorites as a kid. So that's a great one.
Let's end on that note to wash away the name that we mentioned that I apologize for.
Exactly. Jim McMahon will squash the memory of that name that you just mentioned. So, Piper, we have done what we always do on this sports program, and that we have wandered to and fro throughout these topics. And until next time, Jim McMahon.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
I found myself on a ledge, three stories high at some condominiums, contemplating my life and struggling to understand my purpose. Have you ever found yourself on the ledge? My name is Billy Ant. I'm a caring father, mentor, and friend. In my new podcast, Billy and the Goat, I share the life-changing events that shaped who I am today to remind you that no matter how far you've fallen, God can help you get up and thrive. Listen now at lifeaudio.com.